Here we go. Here we go.
Dr. Pepper was stronger.
Try it now. Like,
did it give any other information, or is it just like?
Well, wait, were we recording? I have to
did
say
you hear
it again.
What just dropped at our local Walgreens for
$7.99? The delicious taste of Dr. Pepper with strawberries and cream.
I'm down with
Pneumo,
the Dr. Pepper
drink.
Sponsor.
Hell yeah! I don't know what the hashtag would be, and now I'm on the spot, but it would be something like strawberries and cream's okay with me. Yeah.
And anyway. Then like whatever that sound effect is that people can do that I cannot do.
Yeah, I know what you're doing. Do we want to get started?
Oh, we're recording.
Do we know what we're doing? I certainly hope so, because you're listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Thank you for listening to it. If you've stumbled upon us randomly, we hope that the feeling is comparable to you finding a bag of money in the garbage. Here's hoping. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
And then taking that money to the cops, because that's clearly the right thing to do, as proposed by Hey Arnold.
Save the takes, Mackin.
I'm Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
A reprehensible wrongdoer and a bad, wicked-minded animal is not the way we would describe our super producer, Jason Daphnis, who you can find on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod.
And like Zoink Scoobs, and that's kids spelled with a Z, Rousey Ray!
Also with us today is a very special guest. You know him, you love him, he's returned for more Stoop glory. Please welcome back to the show, Drew Tenenbaum. Drew, how are you doing today? Say something.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I have had a good day of doing programming and then napping. I think that's the two pillars of any good day, is a good amount of work and then a long nap to forget that you had to do all that work. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, hey, we're thriving. We're in a similar place to you, which is a little place we like to call capitalism. So hopefully this little program is a nice, isolated part where you can get away from all of that. And let's talk about something else. We're here today to talk about episode 83 of Hey Arnold. And for those of you keeping track at home, that is season 5, episode 3, going by production code order. And as we always do, we're going to start with episode A, which is called Bag of Money. Original air date, April 5th, 2000. The Wikipedia sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold, Sid, and Gerald find a bag filled with money, though they do not know what to do with it. So Arnold is selected to hold on to it for the time being. However, when Arnold inadvertently loses the money on the way to turn it in, his friends begin to believe that he actually stole the money. So he must work to prove his innocence. And that's where it ends. And as we always do, also, we like to shout out the folks who made this episode possible. And for this particular episode, it was Christine Kolosoff in the director's chair and Steve Vixton in the writer's recliner. Maybe those should be swapped. Christine Kolosoff deserves a recliner probably. But shout outs to the two of them, and shout outs shout outs to Harry first. Harry, who's going to give his takes first about Bag of Money? What'd you think of this one, Harry?
Wow. Well, first of all, shout outs to the writing team. They got their recliner. That's nice to see. Getting pretty snazzy there in the Hey Arnold HQ. I like this episode, I think. I don't know why, but I ended up enjoying it more than I thought I would. I don't know exactly why I had like low expectations for it. But one thing that stuck out to me is that it's a real Cid season so far. And I really like Cid as a character, even though he's like kind of like a faux antagonist so frequently just because of his myriad neuroses. I think that all of the character work in this episode is really on point. Cid gives a great performance as this sort of like ultra paranoid persecutor of his former friend Arnold. I think that like in general, though, I don't know if like I sort of alluded to this, like the actual like A plot of this episode with its Deus Ex Machina, where the woman, the ridiculous woman with the one eyebrow and the pink hair, just sort of shows up and diffuses the entire episode. It doesn't like super work for me, as does the whole sort of like the stakes about delivering the money to the police is kind of false. It rings false for me. But I think that like as a device to set up this tension between Arnold and Gerald, it works really well. I really like an Arnold and Gerald episode. And I think that this is an episode where they sort of make both sides really sympathetic, right? Because like Gerald does do a really good job of sort of like holding out hope for his buddy Arnold and never really fully accuses Arnold the way that Cid is. But the tide is so turning against Arnold and the evidence is so stacked against him that even Gerald sort of like can't help but doubt his friend. And I really appreciated that Gerald approaches this honestly, right? Like first he tries to avoid Arnold, but finally he has that conversation with Arnold. And I just thought that like it's obviously like the arc of this episode is Gerald learning to stick by his friend, but I was really impressed with the sort of like sympathy with which they portrayed his position throughout the episode, right? I think that made it feel a lot more like true to life than if we had all of a sudden had Gerald be sort of the Cid character. I think Cid provides a really great foil for that situation. And again, I think I say this all the time, but like it's a testament to how strong Hey Arnold's characters are that these characters are so well positioned for an episode like this, that it feels so natural, the way each of them react and where this episode ends up going. So I think I like the ideas here. I really like exploring where conflicts between friends come from and how to sort of navigate those. And I think it's really cool. And I felt really good about the ending when Gerald decides to stick up for his buddy. Although they're playing like some weird like faux like organ church music, like testifying music when he does that. And I thought that was kind of silly. Which brings me to the other point, which is I really like the music in this episode. It's really unusual for an episode. It's a lot heavier and more almost industrial sounding than Jim Lang usually gets. That's kind of a new sound from season 5. So I enjoyed that. So yeah, I think you said beforehand, Cody, that like, I don't know that this is like a high point for me so far. Maybe a high point of season 5 so far, but like ultimately I think it's a solid episode. And I think that it's like, it made me feel really, sort of like enthused about the rest of season 5, maybe because I was coming off of season 4 and in a little bit worried about a potential decline in quality. But this just kind of, goes to show me that, we still have, a lot of strong writing coming up. In particular, I just think that like this episode does Hey Arnold really well. You know what I mean? Like, I think that it has a lot of the great elements. Like it has this tension between Gerald and Arnold that feels legitimate and feels sympathetic on both ends and resolves, in a way that is very true to the characters. It has a really good grandpa moment, which maybe we can talk about a little bit more, but, some actual better advice from grandpa than we usually get, which was kind of an interesting one, although it is delivered in grandpa's classic style still. But I just think that like, I don't know, it's sort of right down the plate, sort of like a base hit to go to the sports terminology, right? For you, Cody. So I don't love this episode, but I think I liked it. And I think that, I'm happy with that sort of conclusion personally, but what did you guys think?
Hey, being happy with a base hit, no shame in that. A lot of people in this world don't even get a single base hit, and this show arguably has plenty of them. So there's a lot to chew on. As I chew, I will pass it over to Emily for her takes. Emily, what did you think about this bag of money?
About this bag of money? I liked the sports metaphor, Harry, and I'd say similarly, it's not a three-pointer, but it's a good free throw of an episode.
One single point. Okay, wow.
Well, yeah, a solid point on the board for season 5.
A layup is 2 points, Harry.
I don't know if the system checks out for what I'm trying to get. I'm just trying to make a basketball metaphor in the episode, but because I like how this starts out, it doesn't have anything to do with the episode except for what we're talking about right now. But Gerald and Sid and Arnold walking down the sidewalk and Gerald telling Sid that he can't dribble and then Sid bouncing the basketball immediately off of his little beetle boot, I just thought was funny and a nice way to start the episode. We don't call back to basketball at all, though, unfortunately. But no, I think this is a good episode. I like the ridiculousness of this true story that the woman who's like the Marge Simpson-like character with the pink hair and peg leg, and she's got a pigeon in her hair too, that with the bag of pigeon food. Just the level of the ridiculousness that all happens right in front of Arnold on the bus. It's not like in a dream sequence or anything. It's like all right in the nonfiction portion of the episode. So I like that story causes everyone to be super suspicious of Arnold because of the level of how funny it is and how untrue it seems. And we learn that, of course, what matters most is that Arnold knows he's telling the truth, even if everyone else, including Gerald, don't believe him because the story is so insane. But yeah, otherwise, I don't know. I think it's a good free throw. And Sid calling Arnold the most dishonest guy around once he was really getting up on a soapbox about how Arnold must have been the lying thief that stole all the money, I thought was funny. I agree too with Harry. I think Sid's just a really great character, and I'm charmed by him no matter what his antics are and his anxious, paranoid neuroses. I just think he's a fun character in the show. And what else did I write down? I thought it was, extreme for Gerald to be also so sketched out by Arnold with this story of his, and really brought out the tension like you're saying, Harry. What else did I write down? I think this one is also calling back already to episodes we just saw. So we're in the third episode, right? 3A of season 5. And we just saw Gerald's game where Grandpa gave this, like, the non-advice type of speech. So he's doing it again here, but he actually is giving him legit advice and in a really funny way about the sandwich and how all things will pass. So I did really like that. That was a great scene. And we also just saw Sid the Vampire Slayer, the first episode of the season. So this kind of ties what we just saw all together and feels like more recent of threads of ideas. So maybe that's why I'm giving it a free throw and not a regular 2-pointer, just because we had all of those ideas so recently. But yeah, I think it's a fun episode. And I was really curious about the amount of money, the $3,926. Is that a significant number to the writers or to Craig or to anybody? Or the 13, 12 that they get divided up by 3, or it was in, were any of those numbers, I don't know, significant to them, or why those numbers specifically? Just wondered. And I don't have an answer to that, but maybe a super fan does who's listening, hopefully. And I love the ending too, where Sid is crying out in agony. Hey, Arnold! Just great. You obviously get a kick out of that with the title of the show. And it being used in a legit plot point way in the episode. And yeah, cool music, cool industrial sound, as Harry described. We got a little bit of a different style going on in this one. But I want to hear Drew and Cody's thoughts, so I will kick it back to one of y'all.
Hey, cool. Nice kick. Genuinely a nice kick, keeping with the sporting metaphors. The only note I had about the money amount, just really quick, $3,937. I don't know if it had any significance to the showrunners or anything, but I did look it up. That amount of money, $3,937, in today's money is well over $1 million. So it's not an insignificant amount of cash that they found. Just something to ponder. Meanwhile, Drew, we'd love to hear your thoughts. If you do have a sporting metaphor that comes from a different sport, that would be really cool, not to put you on the spot. Otherwise, it's okay. We can definitely take your takes straight up as they are. The floor is yours, and I'll kick to you. There's a free one.
I don't know if I have a great sports metaphor. If I'm just rambling, I'll say that this episode maybe kept my hand lukewarm, and so it was kind of a bad mitten.
Ooh. You know what? I'll take it.
That's the best I could come up with on very short notice when I realized I was going to be asked to do a sports metaphor. I guess that's not a metaphor, that's a pun, but
they're both literary devices. You know?
Yeah.
For sure a sport, again, though, badminton.
Yeah.
I'm 100% certified a sport. It's true.
I chose the pairing of this episode to guest on because of this episode of the pairing. I didn't necessarily remember the second one, which we'll get to. But I think out of the two of them, I think this one was by far weaker and less unique, less interesting, and had more people who were off character, I think, than some of the stuff that happened in some of the great character development we see in the next episode. But that being said, I chose this one for a reason, because it has so many memorable moments, right? It's like, there's out of this season of Hey Arnold, this had the moments that were burned into my brain, specifically seeing the woman with the peg leg and the pink hair and raising the eyebrow and the pigeon popping out. Like, I dream of that woman, right? Like, everyone knows what that woman looks like when they see into their mind's eye and thinks of this episode. And so I had to watch this episode again to see that. Additionally, like, I think another one of the common like catchphrases is that I come back to is the "and tie him to the tetherball pole," right? Like, he says it again, right? Like, he says, "I tie it to the tetherball pole," and then he like apologizes, and then he says it another time, and that just it just really locks it into your brain as something that will stay with you past childhood and far past puberty into your 30s. So it's doing something right, right? Like, there's a lot of elements here that are quirky Hey Arnold stuff. It reminds me of some of the nonsense and shenanigans that happens in the Fruits in the City episode so early on in season one, I think that is.
It's the first episode.
Yeah, it's the first episode, right? And, like, they get caught up in sort of, like, coincidences and shenanigans that sort of lead them down a path, and that's what happens to Arnold in this episode. And I really like that. And I think, spoiler alert, I did look up the fan reception for this, and people don't like this episode, and people think it's because it's just, like, antagonistic and the tone is wrong. And I think people are just whining that Sid is mean in this episode, and they like Sid, and they like Arnold, and how can Sid be mean to Arnold? And I think that's a bit reductionist, but I can see, I think that Sid, is projecting a lot of his own greed and a lot of his own thoughts about stealing the money and taking the money for himself onto Arnold, and really onto everyone else. And it's sort of like a witch trial kind of thing, right? Like, everyone's, you know, he's so sure that his rhetoric and his fervent, behavior, you know, is enough to not even necessarily convince everyone that Arnold did it, but to take him out of public opinion. And I think that's something that's interesting, despite the fact that I think it does trample a bit on Sid's character. The scene where he pops out in the ice cream van is really funny. I think that's one of the best visual gags in this episode. And I think that I agree that the ending is at least better than the end, at least because everyone forgives him. It's better than, the similar antagonistic against Arnold episode where Arnold betrays Iggy, right? And at the end of that, he does not get forgiven. Iggy's just like, nope, sorry, it will never happen. And like, people hate that episode for that. So at least this one, you know, at least this one, he gets forgiven by basically everyone, especially his best friend. But it didn't happen from character growth, right? It happened from the woman just showing up and being like, actually, I was real. Like, I don't know. It seems like a bad resolution. And I think that's my biggest gripe with the episode is the resolution. I think all your points about like the tension that it brings up with Arnold and Gerald, like that's great. But I think it sort of takes a backseat to, you know, whatever Sid is doing this episode, which is, I mean, just being loud and greedy and paranoid. So I think I'm on the free throw line with Emily.
Hey, he brought it back, folks. No, I really like where y'all got to with this episode. And in my mind, this is it's a solid first serve. You know, it's not necessarily an ace. It's not unreturnable. But it's, you know, it's a first serve. It's in, and just the point goes on. You know, nothing like necessarily super uber special about it. But yeah, I mean, I it's interesting, and I'm glad to hear that you kind of did a deep dive, Drew, to see like what fans thought of this episode. And it's almost like people have never seen an episode that heavily features Sid before, because this is not, at this point, you know, we're in season 5. This is not unexpected behavior from Sid. Like, this is very much where Sid is a featured player. Like, we get this a lot. He is the character who is, he's a lot of things, and he's a really great character because he is so many things, but he does bring that sense of heightened paranoia, and just like really honing in and like tunneling in on one specific viewpoint, and really like kind of running with something and exaggerating and blowing it out of proportions. And he kind of can, you know, he leads to his own downfall, and like that's a really fun part of Sid's character. And I largely had fun with that this episode. I can get where, I definitely get where people see this as like hateful and maybe Sid's being a little overly annoying. You know, on the other side though, you know, looking at Arnold, who, you know, he gets vindication at the end of the episode, why wouldn't you put that money in like a zipped duffel bag? Why? That's like kind of a joke, but more seriously, the fact that he Arnold lost, again, the equivalent of like $5 million in modern day money, and he just like shrugs it off. Like, he doesn't care. Like, he's like, oh, lost the money. Like, oh well, I'm not gonna go back and like report this money that got lost. It should be easy to track down. There's this very distinct person who conceivably took the money, and that is actually sort of where I know there are perhaps other threads that folks want to jump into. I was originally going to ask, you know, hey, what would y'all do in a situation like this? If you found a bag full of money in the garbage, upon reflection, it's, well, all of us are going to say some semblance of the same thing, you know, like, well, obviously we're not going to go to the cops, because that's not something any of us would do. But, I did have the thought while I was watching of like what sort of different episode would this be? How would the tension be different if we didn't see that woman on the bus? Like, we just didn't have the scene of Arnold on the bus with this woman. Like, we know Arnold in the same way that Gerald knows Arnold. Like, we know him to be like a pretty stand-up guy. This isn't something he would feasibly, logically do. But at the same time, it is sort of a bizarre story. There's just, by default, got to be something of an asterisk on our consideration of the situation. And, you know, maybe our perception of the episode would be different. My perception of the episode would certainly be different. I'm still kind of wrestling with what that would be. Wrestling is another sport, by the way. But how different that would be if we only saw like the reveal of that character in all of her sort of unique character traits, you know, shows up at the end. Maybe the vindication would sing that much more, because the tension comes from whether or not Gerald can stand by his friend. And maybe if like Arnold and Gerald can win these people over, as opposed to the tension ultimately being like, is Arnold telling the truth? Is this woman for real? Maybe the upswell of that would be different. Harry, I don't know if you have thoughts on that in particular, but
I do.
We all kind of threw a lot out there. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. I was going to speak to Sid the way that you were speaking to Sid. I think that like, I think Drew actually articulated very, very well what I think is a very specific character trait of Sid's. His sort of like fatal flaw, if you will, is exactly that he does project his own insecurities and paranoias and selfishness, or even sort of like exaggerated versions of those things, onto other people because of his own fear about that in himself, or his own suspicions about that in himself, which is itself a very like relatable character trait in a lot of ways, right? And a very human one. I think it's really fascinating that the fandom doesn't like this episode. I think that like there might just be, and I think we've come across this before, but like a general discomfort with tense episodes, especially episodes where the characters are at a standoff, right? Like, and I kind of get that, right? Like, it's uncomfortable to watch Gerald and Arnold be at loggerheads, but I kind of think episodes like that are important. I'm kind of surprised, in fact, because maybe no spoilers, but like of the two episodes we watched this week, I liked this one more. So maybe we'll talk about that, or I'm sure we will. Just because, and I think that like some of the problems that people have with this episode are actually my favorite parts. For instance, like I think that the tension works really well. And I also think that like, I think that this is a very funny episode, right? Like, I think that like Sid's over the top witch hunt persecution of Arnold and how persuasive and charismatically he is able to bring the school under his sort of paranoid delusion is really funny. Like you had said, Drew, like him popping up inside the ice cream truck is hilarious. Like, I love the idea that he's like this revenant that's sort of like stalking Arnold and will not give him a moment's rest because of this idea. The fact that he keeps bringing up the specific amount of money is super funny. And like, I think that like, again, the foil relationship between he and Gerald, right? Like the sort of like more legitimate, dramatic tension between Gerald doubting his friend and sort of having this dark night of the soul where he wonders if Arnold is really like as true blue as he thought, with the sort of more absurd over the top reactions by Sid is a really great interplay here. And I even think that like, I don't necessarily dislike the resolution, for the same reasons, I guess. I mean, I agree with I guess both of you that it's a little silly that she just kind of appears and disarms the entire episode. But on the other hand, I think that this is an episode about Gerald, right? Like, even though Sid is sort of the inciter, he is still a secondary character in a lot of ways. Ultimately, the arc here is about Gerald learning to, or relearning to, trust his friend, even in the absence of evidence. And he does prove himself worthy of that before the disarming resolution occurs. And I think it kind of makes sense to have Sid not learn anything, again, because of their foil-like relationship to one another in this episode. And I guess, like, to respond to your last point, Cody, I think I thought about that at the same time you did, where, like, what if we didn't see the woman? And that might have made for a tenser episode, but ultimately I think I'm kind of glad that they went with it this way, if only because I think that, like, the idea that we're supposed to distrust Arnold is kind of just rendered moot by the rest of the show, right? Like, I don't think I ever would have at any point believed that Arnold did take the money. In fact, I think that, like, despite the episode going so far to do this, it's a little bit unbelievable that Gerald would have ever distrusted him, too, just because it's like, this is Arnold we're talking about, right? Like, he's like a supernatural paragon of, like, good nature. I have to admit that, like, I knew exactly what was going to happen in the episode the moment that woman entered the bus, which is actually true of the next episode too. But whereas I didn't like it in episode two, I actually really liked it in this episode because I thought it was really funny. It was like literally you just see this woman with one eyebrow and pink giant hair and a pigeon nesting in her pink giant hair step on the bus with four bags that are identical to Arnold's, and it's like, oh, like, oh, I know what the rest of this episode is about. And I think it's pretty funny that, like, they have that visual gag before they even sort of, like, do the obvious thing that they're going to end up doing. For a minute, I thought that this episode was going to be about the mob, which I was very excited about. So it's too bad that didn't happen. But on the other hand, you know, It makes sense. I just wondered if, like, remember the Downtown is Fruits characters? Like, what if those guys came back and they were like, where's my money? See, that would have been pretty funny. Anyway, what do you think about that, Cody? Or do you agree with me about the visual gag? Or would you still have rather sort of, like, seen a different sort of tension play out here?
I was going to talk about something completely different. I think you characterized that super well. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like anything further I have to say about it, I feel like just devolves into like armchair director, which seems to be the case for like any episode where we don't come away like not even just like universally beloved, but just like anything that sort of creeps up like midway. And I don't know, for the sake of, you know, it's new year, new me. I'm not going to be an armchair director anymore. If I'm going to do that, I'm going to be standing up and not sitting down. But I guess the one other thing, and I think you brought it up top, Harry, but the not shouting out, but just like kind of talk in whatever capacity we wanted to talk about Grandpa, because I didn't even think of this as like, at least upon initial rewatch of it yesterday, the, you know, like the Grandpa scene, he does give that sort of off kilter advice in the goofy way, like roundabout way that Grandpa usually gives advice. And I was able to like track it more than I think we often are able to with him, where he equates it to, you know, like, it's bad hand, eventually it'll pass and you'll forget about it. Which is like, I don't know, I'm halfway to actually believing in this case, because Sid is at this point like rallying the whole school against him. But at the same time, to Grandpa's point, it is something that, you know, they're kids, whatever, they're 8 years old, they'll forget about it by, you know, next week. It's just something getting built up in the moment. But yeah, like sort of, it wasn't like an overblown Grandpa scene, at least, I don't know, I would love to hear what you all think about it, but I felt very like, it was almost like a muted Grandpa. Like, it was very functional, very efficient, not like, you know, he did have to use the bathroom, which I don't know. I'm sort of walking it back on myself. I didn't think of this as like an amazing Grandpa episode or like that as an amazing Grandpa scene. And yet he like serves his purpose, as well as he ever has in any of these episodes, maybe the best example of it that we've seen. And he gives like some of the best advice that we've seen. So I don't know. As far as that, you know, a utilitarian Grandpa, patent pending on that, all of that is capitalized. I'd like to hear what y'all have to think about that.
Oh God, I hate the utilitarian Grandpa. He's always talking about how if you have to sacrifice somebody, that's just the way it is to save a million lives. And I'm like, Grandpa, nobody's talking about sacrificing anybody. Why do you always bring this up? I think I agree with that. And I think that this episode does a really good job of illustrating Grandpa's role very clearly, which is a great role in that he gives like kind of true, but kind of bad advice that Arnold like transliterates into the right takeaway anyway, right? And then Grandpa sort of like takes credit for the fact that he did, like, he's like, very, my job here is done, right? Because he knows Arnold is always going to get it right. And I love their relationship being like that, because it's like, well, like, Grandpa did raise Arnold, so I guess in some ways he's responsible for this. But also, like, it's so funny that like Arnold always has to sort of like process and run through the advice and make it into something that's actually applicable. And I just love that, again, that subversion of the sort of mentor-mentee relationship that they have. And I think it's really funny and well done here. What does everybody else think?
I think the bad ham bit is like something that is memorable, something that I, like, when I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, of course, the bad ham speech. I didn't realize it was from this episode until it happened. I guess I also didn't quite see this as a Grandpa-centric episode, or even when I saw that bit, I was like, oh, like, it did seem a little, I don't want to say throwaway, but it did seem like toned down or something like that. I did have a thought about when Emily mentioned how Sid at the end, like, you know, gets so enthralled that he says that Arnold is like the least trustworthy person, or like the least honest person, or what was the exact word of that, Emily? You have it written
he
down.
Said, Arnold's the most dishonest guy around. And then Rhonda goes, you think you know a person, and then they go and do something like this.
And I think that's a direct callback to earlier in the episode when Gerald and Sid and Arnold are in the treehouse and they're fighting over who to take the money home. And they tell Arnold he should take the money home. right? It was their idea to do it, right? It wasn't even Arnold's idea to take it. But Sid says, like, yeah, of course, like, yeah, that's a great idea. Like, I trust Arnold. He's, like, the most honest guy around. Like, it's a direct flip of what was said earlier in the episode. And so it was interesting that you called that out, because I didn't realize that until you mentioned it. And so I think that, yeah, like, the things that Harry was saying and Cody were saying about how this actually is, you know, pretty on beat character for Sid, of sort of just like the paranoia, basically changing, flipping his opinion 180 degrees. I think that's also like some, like, that's kind of the lesson in this episode, is that like your favor in a crowd can like flip 180 degrees. Like you have to be careful about like the social dynamics, because like one coincidence or one fault can like, or one misunderstanding can upend that. And so like, it's not necessarily saying that like that's inevitable, but like knowing that that can happen can like change the way you communicate with others, like in a social space. Yeah. I think those are my only thoughts, about the things that have been said since last time that, I was on mic.
Nice. Yeah. Really well characterized. I guess to that effect, you know, is there anything else about this episode that we did want to touch on, to shout out? If there are any sporting metaphors left in the sporting metaphor well, you know, we can bring those up with a bucket and dump those out. Now is the time and place for any and or all of that, in my humble opinion.
Here's a weird one. I feel like we don't shout out Arnold very much in the shout out section, but I really like Drew's characterization of this moral. And I also think that, like, in an understated way, I think that this is a really good utilization of Arnold as a character, right? Like, it's really like it of course Arnold, this would happen to Arnold, and of course he would tell the truth and stick to his guns to an almost stubborn kind of annoying degree, where he's just like, nope, like, however the public opinion turns against me, like, I know what I'm telling the truth, and that's all that matters. It's like, that's very Arnold. And in this case, like, it works really well for the dramatic stakes of the episode, and it works really well to give Arnold that role in this story. So I think that's something else that this episode does really well that's worth shouting out.
I was just going to shout out the Jolly Ollie Fudgesicle for my boy.
Also, Sid's speech there is really, really funny, where he's like, your birthday was 6 months ago. How many birthdays do you have, Arnold? Why don't you just break 100? What's $100 in the face of, and I can't remember, but he says the exact amount of money again. Really good stuff by Sid this episode.
$1,312 or something like that.
Yeah.
plus change.
Also, the watch. What's the significance of the watch? The metaphor. The talisman. What's it called from the end of Inception?
It's talisman, isn't it?
Or the wait. Token?
Totem.
Totem.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, the watch is the totem from the end. Also, shout out to Home Alone 2, which I think probably did it first at this point. I'm trying to think. It had to have been, right? I mean, by the time this episode came out, Home Alone 2 was out. So, Pigeon Lady, solidarity across generations, across the cartoon live action border. They obviously know each other.
Dude, Home Alone 2 came out in 1992. That is crazy to me.
Home Alone 2?
Yes, dude.
Okay, you could have told me 96, 97.
Right?
92. That's 92.
No, Home Alone
3
came out in 96.
When did Home Alone 1 come out? 97.
And there's the computer chip in the race car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
And the end credit says hell in it. The song that they play, he says, if you're ready to see hell. And I remember being a kid and being like, oh my God, can they say that?
Yeah. I'm also I don't watch all the episodes leading up to this. So you guys have seen many more. And so you're probably used to it. But when I watch this, when the theme song plays, it's a jump scare. It's like Nelson Mandela died in prison in the 80s. I'm like, what's happening? Like, it's so wrong, and maybe you're used to it, but the original recording of the theme song is goated, and the second one is like it's like the LaCroix version, right? Like, someone is playing it down the hall.
No, you're totally right. Like, and the wild thing is I can't even hear the difference anymore, right? Like, I'm sure right. if we went you're back totally and I listened to the first it, yeah. one, but now I'm just like, oh yeah, whatever. I mean, maybe like, oh, I think that like there's some different instrumentation or something, but like, yeah, it's weird the way that because I remember when it shifted, and it really got to us.
I know. And there's no Cornucopion for the Looms logo. It's wild.
Truly. Shout out to the thing that Emily called out earlier when Sid said the title of the television program and I was leaping up from my sofa pointing at the television screen like some famous actor or movie character. Yeah, I don't know. All this talk about nostalgia and Home Alone 3 really puts me in the mood for a Jolly Ollie Fudgesicle. So I'm going to eat one or seven, and then we'll get into the latter half of this episode. Do not touch that dial, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've got episode 83B up next, and that episode is called Principal Simmons. Original air date, April 5th, 2000. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. When Mr. Simmons is upset that Principal Wartz is being too strict with the students, Wartz decides to resign, and Mr. Simmons is selected to take his place. The newly promoted Principal Simmons decides to make massive reforms to permit the school environment to be more liberal, though will the students at PS 118 appreciate his authority? The Wikipedia summary asking me a question, which makes me very uncomfortable. Once again, shouting out the folks who made this episode possible, Christine Kolosoff, back directing episode B, and writing credits for this one, pay extra special attention. We got Joseph the Purdman Purdy. We also got a first timer, at least in the, you know, means of credited show writers for Hey Arnold, Robert Lamoureux, which the internet leads me to believe he and Michelle Lamoureux are siblings. I feel like that's probably the case. However, by sheer coincidence, through my extensive research, Google at one point brought me to an online court summary from a filed divorce between two people named Robert and Michelle Lamoureux. And it was like the timing kind of lined up between like the mid 2000s or so. All that is to say, I'm just a humble dude with a silly microphone, and I can't say for certain if and how these people are connected. All of this is alleged, and we're just trying to do our best in an age where everything is either too reported on or not nearly reported on enough at all. In any case, Emily, what did you think about this episode of Hey Arnold?
Cody, thank you for asking. I like that this starts out with, we were just talking about Jolly Ollie Fudgesicles. This starts with, again, the Jolly Ollie truck of hopefully fudgesicles and more delicious, creamy dairy treats. And Harold going, I'm so hungry, I'm starving, and cake in the shrubs. To kick it off. Great, great tone of intro. I think this is a great episode, but I don't know that I agree with the messaging, or I'm not totally sure how I feel about the message, but I do really like it. And it's fun as a premise to see what it's like when Simmons takes over as principal. Really funny moments with Wartz, especially when he gets really pissed off about having to leave as principal or step down, and he being called out for being so harsh to all the kids. He gets up on the intercom and says, they don't need warts, they say, and let me assure you, you do need warts. And he keeps saying his name, but the way they've written it is like, no, you do need warts, but you don't get warts. And it's really funny, and yeah, a good use of his goofy character name. And yeah, Simmons, we obviously know, is a really great teacher. He cares so much for the students. He tries to, be as kind as possible to them, and, in ways that where he's a little bit too soft sometimes. And so what will it be like when he's principal? We find out, it is pointed out too that he was teacher of the year, and the superintendent or whoever that is that puts him in charge, just calling him sensitive and organized, and he'd be a great fit for this role and everything. So that was a nice setup. And I think it's interesting too that they frame the like the disciplinarian, rule abiding types of ways that you're usually in school with. Oh my goodness, that wasn't a sentence, but the ways in which school is, where there's so many damn rules, they frame it with Simmons doesn't want boundaries. They frame it, they keep framing it as boundaries. We need boundaries. Arnold says, let's set some boundaries to Simmons later when everything's going haywire and the school is in literal anarchy. So I thought that was interesting just because it threw me off, maybe because boundaries are used in such a different context these days and more about, social situations and stuff. But this, they mean to use it here in a way that's disciplinarian and rule following. So I guess I thought it was pretty funny to see the school in the state that it's in, with there being this lack of rules under Simmons' watch. And in the boundary sense, I guess he does have the kids play the role of like assistant to the principal. So there's a lack of boundaries there in that way. I'm just talking out loud to myself, I feel. But they have an honor system, no repercussions, all of that. But what really stands out, obviously, as well, is Wartz's disco performances. The fact that he is in this full-on like white leisure suit with the gold chain and the gold Wartz belt buckle. And he's doing all the disco moves. He's got the point and like the pointing around split, does the splits at the end. He does a great performance. They have the lights animated in the bar and all the characters like really getting into his performance. It's just really funny. And then they bring it back at the end where Simmons is then joining him. And it's like the message of you need rules and you need the softness and the kindness in a school setting, and Simmons is in like a strawberry looking outfit at the end. But yeah, so I think it's really funny for the Wartz moments, the puns with his name and the way they've written that. I don't totally know about the disciplinarian side of the messaging, and I'm really curious to hear what y'all think about that. But I think it's a fun episode, and Principal Simmons. I don't know. I think I'd want him to be my principal if I was in fourth grade.
Yeah. I don't see why not. However, having a principal who can do the splits, which by the way, that makes Wartz a certifiable athlete. I can't even do the splits. That's impressive. Wartz doing the splits on stage in front of people. That's really something. Harry, what did you think about this episode? And were you ever the principal's assistant? Answer honestly.
No. I was sent to the principal's office several times, but never in a assisting capacity, I'm what Principal Wartz would have called, what was it, a delinquent animal or something along those lines.
Many people so many names, but yeah, I think that one
some
filtered its
unbelievably good Wartz writing in this episode, which kind of brings me to my point, which is I think really well characterized by Emily. I'm kind of two minds about this episode, right? Because on the one hand, I think Drew's right, not to sort of like speak for Drew before he's even gotten the chance, but like there are some really, really funny moments in this. There's some really sharp character writing. I think it's the best Principal Wartz episode, pretty much hands down, right? Like, he's so funny in it. He's so over the top. The things that he calls the students where he, like, Rhonda accidentally gets some paint on the floor and he's like, you're a tremendous disgrace and a disappointment. He says to Rhonda, and it's like, oh my God, like, I'm on Simmons' side there where he's like, I've seen you like shouting at children to the point that they cry. That seems really bad. Simmons says it, and like Wartz overreacts immediately where he's like, it's like a jungle out there. Like, this is Wartz as like the character from Whiplash. I think that's really funny. I love that Simmons has this thing where like he's so naive and overambitious whenever we see him, where like he immediately believes in this sort of like hippie utopia, like Montessori school type deal, and like obviously does not have anywhere near the authority or the ability to pull that off, unfortunately, right? I think that like watching his downfall is very fun, and juxtaposing it with Wartz's first liberation, and then his sort of like equally over the top dismay at being deprived of his principal job to the point where he repaints his house to look like the principal's office. Like, this is really Hey Arnold comedy firing on all cylinders in a way that I think later seasons actually do a really great job of, is that I feel like the writers have gotten so comfortable with the tone of Hey Arnold that they can really ratchet up the absurdity without losing sight of the characters in ways that can be really, really effective here. But yeah, to Emily's point, like, not only do I obviously disagree with the message that like basically authoritarianism has a role in educating children, which is not obviously not really the message here, but you know what I mean. But like, I just think that like, even as like sort of like distasteful as I find that, I also just think it's kind of lazy writing. The whole like both sides thing where it's like, well, Principal Wartz is like overly authoritarian and Principal Simmons is sort of like overly permissive and has no authority or backbone. And damn it, they just got to meet in the middle, right? Like, you got to hear out both sides and make sure both sides have valid points and arguments. And really, they should be working together in harmony. It's just like I said in the first half, like, I knew that this was going to be what this episode was going to be like immediately, right? Like, and they play it straight, like start to finish. And like, I think kind of like the first episode, like the best parts of this are the Hey Arnold flourishes, right? It's like Curly swinging from the rafters. It's Helga talking about how she wants WrestleMania to be an institution at the school. It's Harold constantly talking about how hungry he is. Like, there are all of these little moments that are so well constructed, and that, like, again, make this show, like it is at its best, feel like something where, like, we are just getting a snippet of an ongoing life that is actually happening, right? Where it feels like, oh, like this is just a day in the life of PS-118, and it feels so natural and right. Right down to, like, Arnold being the sort of, like, reticent principal's assistant. Like, of course he would get stuck in that role, right? But, like, I don't know. I just like, I think it's like such an easy target, I guess, is my big problem with this episode. And like one that like is taking such shortcuts that it ends up saying kind of like silly things, like that there is any validity to Principal Wartz's teaching style at all, which of course there's not, right? Like just because Principal Simmons has to like have a backbone and institute some sort of punishments to keep kids from getting out of line does not mean that there's any validity to the authoritarianism demonstrated by Principal Wartz. That's a total false equivalency, right? And like, I don't think that the show thinks that that they are equivalent things. I don't think that it really buys into the both sidesism that it's apparently espousing. It's just that the episode itself does, out of sheer like sort of like laziness, right? Where it's just sort of like using a shorthand to get at what it wants to get at and have the fun that it wants to have with these characters. But in the process, it ends up creating that false equivalency. And you know, I expect more from Hey Arnold, I guess. So like, that's my main issue with this episode, which is kind of a shame because again, like, I think that the writing is actually really good and funny. But I'm really interested in what everybody else thinks too, especially it sounds like Drew, because Drew liked this episode more than Bag of Money, which makes a lot more sense now that we've talked about both, I think.
True. Yeah, I was going to say, you know who I think is good and funny? Drew. Drew, let us know what you think about this episode. Where are you at right now?
I appreciate all those comments. I don't know if I will live up to them. When I say that I think this episode is better, I just thought it was much more enjoyable to watch. Like, moment to moment, there was more to see, there was more to engage with, there was more stuff that we hadn't seen before. I gravitate towards the episodes of Hey Arnold that dare to take a minor character and give them their own episode. And this is one of those episodes that does this. And I think sometimes in a sneaky way, and Hey Arnold likes to do this all the time, where they kind of pretend like the episode is about one character, but really it's not, right? Like, this is really not an episode about Principal Mr. Simmons, right? It's not about Simmons. Yeah, he's in there. He's got his arc, sure. But, like, this is really Wurtz's episode. And, like, I really like that they're willing to go out on a limb and do that, especially paired with an episode that is, like, so core to Hey Arnold's, like, early seasons, right? Like, the previous episode in this pair, The Money Bag, right? That's, like, that could have happened in season one, right? Like, that's like baseline. Like, those characters have been around. Like, we know all the kid characters. But when you get into a mature show with five seasons, right, you're allowed to take the steps into making, right? Like, if someone pitched the Principal Wurtz-centric episode, you know, in season one or season two, I think it would have been difficult to get produced. But now that they've done episodes like that, where they take specific minor characters, you know, Bob, Mr. Wynn, Ernie, right? Like, all of these characters get basically their own episodes, you know, even though they're centered around Arnold in some way, but they basically get their own episodes where they're characterized. And that's really strong and something that Hey Arnold really does in a way that I think, especially other cartoons of the era, weren't doing much. I think they sort of stuck with more of a centralized cast of characters and permuted on what they could do. The funniest thing in this episode is when out of nowhere you see what Principal Wurtz has been doing with his time off, right?
Yes.
They don't hint at it. They don't see, but they say, actually, you know what? We're going to go and see what he was doing. And he rises from the bottom of the stage. There's smoke. He does this song, which is a parody of I Will Survive. I was very surprised that it was basically just a line for line parody of I Will Survive. It's called I Will Prevail in the Hey Arnold episode. It reminds me of the 30 Rock bit where Jenna has to sing Chunk of My Lung instead of Piece of My Heart by Janis Joplin. Chunk of My Lung. So funny that they felt like, you know, they could probably get away with anything they wanted, and they decided to do that bit. But that's super funny. And then directly after that scene, he walks out of the venue where, I don't know if it's a karaoke bar, I don't know if he's a performer, like they let you make the assumption in your mind, but what they tell you is that he has flowers, he has an award, everyone loved it, his life is booming, better than ever. But when he walks out and he sees the school and he's not a part of it, he breaks down. He drops the award and the flowers. He breaks down. There's a real emotional moment there that, like, as good as his life seemed, he's literally a disco star. People love him. He got an award. He had it looked like an Oscar, like a Golden Globe that he walked out with. And it wasn't enough for him because that wasn't what was fulfilling for him, right? It was the job that he already had. And that moment was not only hilarious, like I laughed out loud when he literally broke down, and it was also moved by that, right? It was, there was something to that moment that really got me. And it comes back again where he is, making his house look like a principal's office. He's principaling the doll. And, you know, that's very sad. And it's funny, but it's, you know, if you look at the reality of it, it's sad, right? Like, he's lost his passion. He's lost, you know, what made him tick. And maybe he's realized that it's because he had lost sight of what true principling was, or how to treat kids, or whatever way you can retcon a real meaning into this, you know, the sloppy message of the episode behind the, what was funny about it. I do think that, the power dynamics that they're playing at here is really interesting, because this incident was incited by the superintendent coming, right? Like, this Principal Wurtz wouldn't have left and found out, like, you know, his dreams of, you know, dancing wasn't really his, what he wanted or whatever. He wouldn't have even found any of that out if he hadn't been, like, pressured by the systems of power in place, right? Like, he needed to be more powerful and be more authoritarian in the face of someone who had power over him to, like, prove his position in the hierarchy. And so that was the inciting incident, and it all centers around Wurtz. And so the fact that Simmons steps up, I think, is more of just a funny foil to what we know of how Wurtz interacts with the school, right? Like, the wind chime that he puts up instead of the bell, which is a very funny bit, but completely impractical. So I think what I'm saying when I say that I like this episode is, moment to moment, it just really hits, right? Like, it's so fun to watch compared to the last episode, which maybe had better arcs or something, right? And not only that, but the fact that they were able to make this episode at all really says something about Hey Arnold and the journey that the show has been on for 5 seasons, that they, you know, whoever is producing it had the ability to do this and that the production team had the faith in them to produce something like this for a character who basically is a side character.
Yeah, wow, that's really, really well said, and actually all of you have given me quite a bit to think about, and like, not that I dislike this episode. I came into it, I was trying to reconcile a few different things, and maybe that's why I landed on a weird foot with it, partially because our last, or one of our last impressions with Wartz, where we kind of leave off with him, is like thinking about Helga on the couch when Dr. Bliss comes, and Wartz is like, and I was even praising it during the season 4 recap of just Wartz, or I think it was, or at the very least during the episode, like Wartz is, he comes across as more of a buffoon. He feels like realized in this form because he's like a member of authority, but he's one of the many like adult characters in this world who's like really just like a kid in adults' clothing, you know, like adults in this world are not super capable. Dr. Bliss is, she's maybe like the only one. But then to get that hard pivot where Wartz is, yeah, like that strict authoritarian, it was, I don't know, sort of weird to, re-see him in that light. And, it brings up the types of things that all of you, I think especially Emily was talking about, of just like wrapping our head around, what does it actually mean to be like, what's an effective principal? Like, are they more of a, is it the disciplinarian factor? Are they more of a figurehead? The schools I went to growing up, they were just like more of, the figurehead, or at least like the main principal was, and like the vice principal was usually the one that you were like really intimidated by, or they were more of like the disciplinarian. Maybe that's the case everywhere. I don't know. I can only speak to my experience. That's how this all works. But the, yeah, I don't know. Like I'm kicking those things around, and you know, this version of Wartz probably, you know, who pops off the handle probably shouldn't be working at a school. And yet Principal Simmons is probably not like optimally fit for that principal role. And yet I feel like this is a really fun and good episode for both of these iterations of them. I kind of came away with a similar feeling of everything Drew was talking about with this show being the type of show that can really cater to those unsung characters, give them their moment in the spotlight, really make them shine. And like Wartz does in this episode, you know, really, all I'm saying is that I would have loved an episode just about Wartz's experience at the karaoke bar, which is like right across the street from the school. Like that's hilarious. That's a low key crucial component of the geography of this city, is that right across the street from the school is this karaoke bar that Coach Wittenberg and Tish hang out at, that I think I saw like Phoebe's dad,
Phoebe's parents, both of them. Yep.
Phoebe's parents, just like this, it's the spot to go. It's where to be, kind of maybe a little unnerving that it's across the street from the school, but I'm not going to audit that too much. I'm not going to interrogate the heck out of that just yet. But, yeah. And I mean, the karaoke components were very fun. The school thrown into chaos was really fun. I think I saw Eugene at one point being dragged away by that monitor lizard from last season. Really, really great stuff. Visual, like one-off visual gags all around. So the more I think about this episode, the more I'm willing to forgive the sort of weird, the weird sort of mixture we're left with, you know, grappling with the role of Simmons and Wartz, and you know how that power struggle works. You know, that I didn't even think about that. The just like the superintendent being dropped in to force that move is. I don't know, kind of, it's strange and one-off, but it's whatever. It's obviously not who the episode is about. I don't know. I'm willing to kind of gloss over all that and focus on the things that I feel way better about, which is karaoke and Principal Wartz doing the splits. Because really that's what cartoons are all about, Charlie Brown.
So first of all, really great points, Drew. I think that like this is a really great demonstration of like the value of guests, right, on this show, is that like I feel like we take for granted that Hey Arnold can do episodes about secondary characters because we've seen more of them and because we like kind of get inured to it because they are sort of drip fed. But like for somebody who doesn't watch every episode to come in and see an episode like this really does remind us of how far we've come, right? It's like, you're totally right. Like this could never have been a season one or season two episode, right? Because they didn't have the groundwork laid for Principal Warts and they couldn't have gotten away with it. So like it's really great that like that is a huge point in this episode's favor, is that it definitely demonstrates the like confidence and progression of the writer's room, which is awesome. And like to Cody's point, I think you articulated very well like why I have the issue with this episode that I do, is that you're very right that like this is totally just Warts's episode. I think Drew, you said that, not Simmons. And like this episode is definitely at its strongest when it's following Warts and Warts's arc and progression, which begs the question for me, like, why do we need all of the Simmons stuff, right? Like, I don't like it, in fact. Like, I think it's kind of, I don't know why Simmons had to be quote-unquote put in his place, right? Like, I think that, like, Simmons is not, like, an egotistical enough character that we feel good to see him sort of, like, come up short in his attempts to be principal. In fact, it came off to me as kind of mean-spirited, right? And like a little bit like comeuppance for a character who didn't deserve to get any comeuppance. And it does the thing where it sort of like ends up inadvertently making the points about how actually you need an authoritarian figure like Warts, right? Which is kind of gross. Like that's just a weird wart, no pun intended, on this episode that didn't need to be there, right?
Sorry, that was intended. Just throwing that flag on the play. Please yeah. Continue, Harry.
Wow, flag on the play. There's another sports metaphor. We brought it back. And so I agree with Cody. Like, I don't want to play backseat director too much either, right? But like, I wanted to see, I think that an episode where Warts like tries to go and have a fulfilling life and finds that he needs the student body so badly is a hilarious idea and concept for an episode, right? Like, I think that, again, the like funny and sad joke about him lecturing the doll is really funny. But like, I just wonder if like maybe they could have done it in like a less mean-spirited way, where like maybe the arc could have been that like, oh, Warts actually likes being an educator, right? But like, even then, like, he is just like shouting at the doll, right? And he kind of goes back to just shouting at the students when he goes back to school. And I would have liked to have seen like maybe Warts had to learn something also, because it's like Simmons learned something, and like I guess Warts learned that he needs his job, right? He needs to be the principal. But like, I don't know, I feel like the episode kind of like it doesn't do a disservice to his character, because it's very consistent in the way that it portrays his character. But I guess I'm just sort of like feeling the way Drew felt about last episode, where it's like it would have been cool to see Warts have some more kind of growth, or at least to learn a little bit from Simmons, the way Simmons maybe learned from Warts, which doesn't really happen so much as Warts just realizes that his life is hilariously empty without PS-118. But that being said, that in and of itself is pretty funny. And I really like that emotional moment that Drew alluded to. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that I'm coming around a little bit on this episode, even if my, issues with it remain.
That's totally okay. There's shades of gray in every discussion. In some cases, even like 50 of them. So it's just something to think about. Speaking of shades of colors, the school colors are green and orange. It's kind of wild.
Oh yeah, we forgot to talk about the song, the school song.
Is that song?
This is a very musical episode of Hey Arnold. There's the Survivor parody, which is really funny and pretty sharply written. And then there's also two different PS-118 songs, because I'm pretty sure Simmons rewrites the school song to be about open communication and harmony and love and all that stuff, which is also pretty funny.
Love and harmony? That's
I didn't realize that the lyrics, the show subs, that the lyrics were different when he was having them perform it. Good bit. And also when you said that they had a Survivor parody, I was like, what? Because I watched the TV show, the CBS hit reality show Survivor. And so I was like, what do you mean? But you meant I Will Survive.
Yeah. Which is the name of the song is not Survivor. Although,
well, Survivor is the classic song by Destiny's Child.
Right.
But we got a shout out specifically Gloria Gaynor, the singer of I Will Survive. I looked up, it came out in 1978.
Literally iconic.
So, wait, yeah, 78, iconic,
and
really?
Was still a hit back in whenever this came out in what, 2000.
I thought it was still a going much strong. Older song than that, to be honest, but makes sense.
I mean, it was in the disco era.
Good point. Yep. I'm learning all kinds of things about time today. Lots We're of still in disconcerting the disco era. Things. Okay.
Disco inserting things. Go ahead,
the
Drew.
The clip of Harold saying, "I'm hungry." That's a reused clip. Like, that's the joke, right? That they've taken that exact same clip and put it in multiple episodes, right? Like,
yes, and that is actually
tone or something.
Like, yeah, no.
In the last episode that we did, he said that. I swear.
And that's kind of a recurring in joke in Hey Arnold, because they reuse audio lines pretty frequently. There's this one in particular, in the movie theater, when they're like watching a horror movie, and like there's this woman who like she gets like picked up by the like creature of the Black Lagoon or something, and then he puts her down and starts walking away, and she goes, "Wait, where are you going?" And she says it like that, and I swear they use that audio inflection like six times throughout the show, and it's so like indelible in my memory now because of the fact that they reused it. And so I'm always on the lookout for moments like that in Hey Arnold, and I love that when it happens.
Yeah, and like that's one of them where it's like, I know that they've used that exact, either they're trying to get him to say it just the same, or it's the exact same line. Just resampled.
Just resampled. I just went through, not to drag us all the way back to, did y'all have school songs for your elementary schools? We did. Oh, yeah. And I frightened myself. I can remember the whole thing. I don't know how that has, I don't, my brain has been,
let's go, baby.
The lyrics.
Belt it
no,
out.
No, not at all. I didn't even think, I don't know. That seems like a made up memory, but if all of y'all had elementary school songs.
Oh, we had one. Ours was to the tune of, like, I think, because, you know, we're from Minnesota, at least I am.
Oh, yeah.
Some of us that are on this podcast are from Minnesota, and some are from places that are similar to Minnesota and farther away. But the, Emily has a complicated moving around history. And I'm trying to represent it accurately without giving any details.
No, I just love that you were like, everybody on this podcast is either from Minnesota or from somewhere else.
Emily's also in the witness protection program, which is why he's being so cagey about it.
That's right. If you're Emily's, never mind. I'm not going to say it because that'll spawn into existence. But no, ours was to the tune of like the Minnesota, the Gophers.
What are you guys talking about? That's not a thing.
Like the Rouser. That's
yeah.
What they call it,
okay.
Right? Yeah.
They called it the Rouser.
Well, no, yeah. The Rouser is like the Gophers, like the Minnesota, the U of M theme.
Okay.
The Rouser. That's like a college theme. Yeah. And our elementary school theme, shout out to Oakview, was to the tune of the MN Rouser.
Okay.
You guys are, that's wild. We definitely did not have a school song that I can remember at Basswood. Maybe.
I didn't know idea where you went, but I was, I was literally going to jump in and be like, okay, Basswood.
That's a very local joke, but, absolutely hilarious. Emily, did you have a school song in your schools?
So I was in so many different schools in all of my time in the witness protection that I don't remember any of them. I truly don't remember them. I kind of remember one in high school, but I was in three different high schools and two different elementary schools. And yeah, I don't remember any of them. I just remember the mascots from each.
Yeah, I truly had no idea.
Like a Rouser.
I had no idea that school songs were a thing, except in college, I guess. Interesting. Did you guys have to stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance every morning in elementary school? Man, this country sucks so bad.
Except in Texas, you have to do the Pledge of Allegiance to the Texas flag as well as the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag.
So,
except not if you're me and you just moved there and I refuse to say it, but insane.
Because
the Texas flag is...
No, yeah.
It's the same exact pledge, but they sub in.
You say it with a certain twang in your voice.
State of Texas.
So did you have to do it twice every morning?
Everyone in class would do it twice and just back to back.
God.
And I stood there
and
looked around, and I would never do the Texas one. But that's something to do with the Texas flags allowed to be at the same level as the American flag. It's allowed to fly at the same height. And yeah,
also
Texas was its own country and still is, essentially,
in a lot of ways, unfortunately. But also I love the idea of like rebellious little Emily being like, Texas is not my home. I have no allegiance to Texas. So you would say the American Pledge of Allegiance, and then you would just not, you would refuse to say just the Texas one.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't make it a big deal, but I just stood there in silence.
No, that rocks.
Hand
That's
over
so
my
good.
Heart.
Amazing.
Shout out to any of our listeners who are from Texas. All of this sounds very weird, and I'm sure it is, whether or not you can see that. Also, a lot of us here have never lived in Texas, and part of that is just hard to reconcile. The one bit of, I guess, credence I'll give to y'all, I want your climate. It was like 20 below today, and I don't like that very much. So
except they actually just got ice and closed school because they got ice.
I was talking with a client today who's from Texas, and they brought that up, and just like they had today off because of ice, and I'm just like, come on.
Doesn't it always
ice is my always, life?
Yeah, doesn't it always make you feel like a badass? Like ever since I was a little kid, I felt that way. Every time I heard, like, I've got cousins who live in Tennessee, and they're like, oh, whenever we get a snow, we close all of our schools and government buildings, and I'm always like, ha, you guys are cowards, you're weak, you won't survive up here.
They also don't have like an immense horde of like contractors with plows ready to go across every road in the city. Like the infrastructure's not there. So
right, but
that's probably
that makes more sense and doesn't make me feel as cool and tough.
No, yeah, no. Okay, yeah, the real reason is because those guys are
any other lingering threads or shout outs that we wanted to put out there for this episode? Other than in before Patrick from SpongeBob going, what's so great about dumb old Texas? Just I figured we'd get there eventually. Maybe Emily was going to shout that out specifically, or maybe not. But in any case, Emily, the floor is yours.
The howdy, y'all. I would say I have a lot of shout outs on this one and just stuff we didn't talk about, because I think this is a great episode despite the muddled messaging. I really liked Simmons dejectedly going, talking about things helps, as all the kids walked out of the auditorium. Nice callback to the therapy episode in some ways. I really loved seeing the kids rule with kids with a Z. Specifically, the graffiti across the PS-118 in front of the building, really great. Full-blown anarchy in that moment. I'm going to have to get a screenshot of it for the socials. I think I already shouted this out, but Simmons as Wartz's hype man in the second version of I Will Prevail, the finale. Wonderful, wonderful outfits all around. And shout out to Wartz. There's a quick shot of him walking into downtown from out of the school as he's leaving his principal duties and headed straight to downtown. It's a quick shot. I just really liked how the city looked there. And I also like that there's a hot air balloon scene real quick with kites, and it looks like an idyllic day out in Hillwood.
Where did they find the time to rehearse the second half of the dance together?
That wasn't rehearsed. That was right off the cuff. That's just how in sync they are now.
Pure improvisation, baby.
Also, shout out to Texas, great state. And I was going to shout out one more thing, which was Arnold, actually. Again, another Arnold shout out. He very calmly and, you know, with all not a care in the world, grabs the stink bomb that flew through the window in Principal Simmons' office, and he throws it right back out the window and closes the window, and he doesn't even mention it.
Grace
and,
under pressure.
Yeah, we love to see it.
Cool heads prevail. He goes with the flow. He's improvisational. Hey, just like us, and just like our special bud and supreme guest, Drew. Drew, thank you so much again for being here with us. If you could remind the fine folks out there where they can find you, and if you have anything that you would like to plug, now would be a cool and good time for that as well.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's always such a blast to chat with you guys about something that you're so passionate about and obviously know so much about after doing five whole seasons of this, it's, you know, super amazing to see how far you guys have come, and so happy to be a part of it. If people who are listening want to find me on the internet, because they're not going to find me in real life, I'm not going to reveal my my personal location, my address. But on the internet, you can find some mashups that I've made. Those are like musical mashups on YouTube under the name Ash Cool Bro. Don't ask me what it means. There's some popular ones on there and some less popular ones. And I think the last one I released was a year ago, but that doesn't mean that I don't have some that might come out eventually if you subscribe. So you can look there, or same name, Ash Cool Bro on Twitter. You can find out some stuff about the games that I make on there as well.
Booyah. Excellent. Amazing plugs all around. Amazing guest. Amazing friend. Amazing pal. And animation czar for the masses. Thank you for being here. And thank you, dear listener, for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. And that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Chitaki Harry.
And I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Okay, let's give this a try. Bamber Valley School, a song of praise to thee we sing. And far on high, up to the sky, the echo of our song will ring. Ever loyal in every way, this our song will be. BAMBERVALLEY. Bamber Valley, hats off to thee.
Rah!
Did you think that I'd fold? Well, I won't, because I'm bold. I will prevail. I will not fail. You may have thrown me out the door, but I won't cry or weep or wail. Oh, I'll weather the storm too, yes, I'll keep on smiling through. And while I'm turning blue, I'll simply send my thanks to you. I will prevail, right through this gale, right through wind and snow and ice and rain and sleet and fog and hail. I will prevail, I will prevail, I will prevail.